Hi, I'm Joe Heim, the moderator for the debate tonight between the candidates for the Wisconsin State Senate 32nd District. District that composes all of La Crosse County, parts of Monroe, and all of Vernon and Crawford. I'd like to welcome you all, and I'd like to welcome the three candidates tonight. First of all, there's incumbent State Senator Jennifer Schilling, her opponent, former State Senator Dan Kopanky, and Chip DeNeur, an independent candidate. Okay. This debate is sponsored by the following groups: the La Crosse Tribune, WXOW News 19, the WKBT News 8, WLSU, WPR, the League of Women Voters, and last but not least, University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. On campus, it is supported by the Joint University Legislative Affairs Committee, the Poli Sci Department, Faculty Senate, Student Association, Academic Staff Council, and University Staff Council. The panelists tonight, my separate sheet here. On my far right, got to get this right, Mike Thompson from WKBT, from WXOW, Caroline Hecker, the Tribune, Chris Hubbage, WLSU, Hope Kirwan, Bob Schmidt from Today's Talk, 1390, and WISM, WIZM, Brad Williams, and last but not least, Jane Clickham from League of Women Voters. Now, just a couple things so we get the words right. The debate format: each candidate will have 1 minute as an introductory statement. From there, we'll go to questions from the panel, and each candidate will have 1 minute to respond. If they want to respond to one of the other candidates, they're welcome to do so in about 30 seconds. Candidates can do that. They'll then be followed by a closing statement of 1 minute. And timekeeper, by the way, is Mary Nugent, the League of Women Voters. So thanks, League, for doing that. Okay, two other things quickly. One, please turn off your cell phones if you haven't already done so. And secondarily, please refrain from clapping and cheering during the, or throwing tomatoes and things of that sort, if we can avoid that. So without further ado, please welcome the three candidates. Dan Kopanky won the coin toss, and he goes first. Jennifer Schilling goes second, and Chip DeNeur third.
Good evening, everybody. As I look over this crowd, it's great to see this big crowd. I see a lot of friends. I am thrilled to be here. I want to introduce one special friend. I have my high school sweetheart and also my wife of 47 years here. My wife, Ruth, is here. We have four kids, 13 grandkids. And I can say without hesitation that I wouldn't be standing here today as a state senate candidate or as co-owner, of the La Crosse Loggers without the contributions, love, and devotion of my wife, Ruth. I've been on this campus. I'm a graduate here. I've got 2 degrees here. I love this campus, absolutely love it. And I've been out here. I was actually out here today, and I've encountered and engaged with so many students out here, and it's been great. What I found is that they are happy to be here. They're excited to be here, and they have faith in their future. And so you will find during this debate, this forum, whatever you want to call it, that I am a glass half full guy. I always think that we have a lot of things going for us. We have some issues that need attention. Come together, we can solve those issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Senator Schilling.
Good evening, and thank you, UW-La Crosse, and our table of sponsors for this evening's forum. By my count, this is the ninth time that the three of us have appeared together in some shape or form on radio or in person. You know, Wisconsin is a great place to live, work, and raise a family. And we are fortunate to really live in one of the most beautiful parts of the state. However, too many people across Wisconsin continue to struggle due to stagnant wages, below average job growth, continued cuts to K-12 schools, and cuts to higher education. But I believe that we can do better. And I believe it's time that we put Wisconsin workers, families, and Wisconsin businesses first. We need to stop handing out tax breaks to well-connected millionaires and companies that outsource our jobs. We need to invest in public education, K-12, technical colleges, and universities. And we need to focus on solving problems to stop the political attacks on healthcare organizations, and public employees, teachers, and restore our long history of open government. I look forward to tonight's debate to talk about infrastructure, education, and jobs in the economy.
Thank you, Senator. Chip DeNeur.
The cornerstone of my campaign is opposition to the North-South Corridor. a highway that the Department of Transportation wants to build despite massive opposition in La Crosse. Makes no sense for the DOT to spend $140 million on a highway that most people don't want. I also favor the legalization of marijuana. Four states have legalized it already, and it looks like four more will during the election on Tuesday. If we legalize pot, it'll bring much needed revenue into the state, and we won't be making criminals out of people who choose to use it. And finally, the Department of Natural Resources is not protecting our natural resources. Polluters are getting away with polluters. It's one of the biggest failures of the Walker administration.
Thank you, Chip. First question goes to, Chip DeNoor, and it comes from Mike Thompson.
Thank you very much, Joe. And I wanted to begin, since we're here at UW-La Crosse and college students making up a large portion of our audience tonight, with college affordability. Wisconsin has the third highest percentage of students in the nation graduating with college debt. Governor Walker has indicated that he would like to extend the tuition freeze, possibly for another 2 years, but that has also been coupled with a $250 million cut to the UW system in this current budget. My question is two parts. Do you believe that the tuition freeze should be extended? And also, do you believe the UW system currently has enough state support and funding to continue its high level of education and remain competitive?
Well, let me say this, Mike. I'm not in favor of any more tax dollars to the UW system. My position is that you had a $250 million cut. Let's not panic. Let's see what's happened. I think the system will adjust and adapt, and things will be fine. That's what I think. I could be wrong. And if I am wrong on that, then you get rid of the tuition freeze, and you let the students, I'm sorry, students, but you let the students pay for it, not the taxpayers. The taxpayers, concern for the taxpayers, is uppermost in my mind as I campaign for the Senate.
Okay, thank you. Next, Dan Kopanke.
Well, despite these cuts, we have consistently seen our university system perform very, very well. The campus at Madison is regularly in the top 15 in the nation of public universities. This campus right here is number 4 in the upper Midwest as far as comprehensives are concerned. So we're doing very, very well despite those cuts. A few years ago, they found like $600 million in a special fund. And we've used that, I believe. But it would have been irresponsible on the part of the legislature to grant more money to the university system when they found this $600 million in this fund. So now they've used that. That's over. Let's take a look at the revenues that we have coming in. And then let's look at our priorities and expenditures. And if there's extra money there, I know that they've asked for like $42.5 million. Then let's take a look at that. But we base our decisions on the revenue that we have and the priorities that we have.
Senator Schilling?
Well, UW-La Crosse and the entire university system is critical for economic growth and really an economic driver in our state. Over the last 5 years, higher education has seen a $1 billion cut from the majority party. $800 million to the university system, $200 million to our technical schools. As we talk about ways for college affordability, the way that we really move the dial for a million people here in this state that carry $19 billion in student loan debt is to allow them to refinance their student loans. Just like you can your mortgage or your home or your car, that's something that is familiar, and I think that's the best way to really help students who are carrying debt, because even with the tuition freeze, after they leave the bricks and mortar of this campus, they are still saddled with an average of $30,000 in debt.
Thank you. The second question comes from Caroline Hecker, WXOW, and goes to Dan Kopanke.
Thank you. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Caroline.
School district administrators in Western Wisconsin say they're getting far fewer applications for open jobs than ever before. And Wisconsin Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Evers attributes that the state's teacher shortage to the political rhetoric and collective bargaining reforms of Act 10 that he says devalued the profession. What is your take on the teacher shortage in Wisconsin, and what are some short-term solutions to the problem?
Well, I think the shortage here in Wisconsin mirrors what's happening throughout the rest of the states. This isn't unique to this state. It's unique to the nation. And so as we have some vacancies, so do other states. And I've attended school board meetings here throughout the district. I haven't had that come up. Quite to the contrary, I've had a lot of positive things come up about what is happening in these school districts that I attended those meetings at. So, yeah, you know, there's now competition for teachers out here. And that's a great thing, I think. It's a great thing for teachers. It's a great thing for students out here that are thinking about possibly going into that profession. So, you know, it's nationwide, and I think what it'll do is fuel more people, more students to take a look at education, because school boards and school districts are actually offering more for teachers, especially those that are specialized.
Senator Schilling?
Well, I think Act 10 really was a solution for 1 year. For 1 year. Are we really better off after Act 10 with those savings? We are seeing crumbling infrastructure. We are seeing the deepest cuts to our public education system. My opponent, Dan Kopanky, voted for a budget that had the largest cut to public education with $850 million. As we look at now where we are with a teacher shortage, I do hear about that from administrators. When I talk about workforce development and I talk about welders and skilled workers, one of the school district administrators said, you better add teachers to that. One way that we could help is by looking at loan forgiveness for teachers who go into underserved areas, but we need to be looking at those wages as well. But certainly I do hear from school administrators that we are seeing a teacher shortage, and I fear that our rural schools will become finishing schools for young teachers who are right out of school who want to get a couple years of experience and then move on to our other districts.
Okay, thank you. Chip Denor?
Well, it's a subject I'm not that knowledgeable on, but if there is a teacher shortage, you know, you hear all these stories about college grads that they're major, they're not employable, and they're home living in their parents' basements. Well, you know, the capitalist system can solve that. You know, if there's a shortage of teachers, more students should go into teaching, then they'd have a job and be able to pay off their loans.
Go ahead.
I'd just like to add a couple things. K-12 has been the number one priority for years and years as far as spending in our legislature is concerned. And we have actually increased our funding in recent years. And our average per student is $11,186, which is more than the national average. It is still, again, our priority. And you talk about the $850 million. Again, school districts were that bond between the WIA Trust and the insurance for the schools was broken. And school districts saved hundreds of millions of dollars throughout the state because of that.
Okay, thank you. The next question comes from the Tribune's Chris Hovich. Goes to Jennifer Schilling.
Hello, Senator. In many parts of the state, in particularly in the 32nd District, the Department of Transportation says more than half the roads are in poor condition, yet the state is facing a nearly $1 billion shortfall to maintain current funding levels. Do you support raising taxes or fees to fund transportation? And if so, which taxes and fees?
Well, when I became the leader 2 years ago, that was the first area when people said, where can you work with the majority party? And for years, transportation infrastructure has not been a partisan issue. And so after 2 years, I was disappointed that that was one of the areas that we could not find some common solutions on over the last term. And I think as we move into the next legislative session, the pressure has been ratcheted up on transportation and finding a long-term sustainable fix. As we look at the budget that the governor has put forward, he is in favor of delays. We need to look at a way that we can diversify the funding stream for our roads. We have reports that come forward that Wisconsin has the third or fourth worst roads in the nation, and a strong infrastructure system is critical for moving goods through this state. It also is critical for good paying jobs that men and women are out there with infrastructure improving and repairing our roads and our bridges. So I certainly believe everything should be on the table. We see leaders of the assembly are talking about that as well, but we certainly need to look at everything on the table to move forward.
Thank you. Chip Denor.
Well, you know, I wrote the head of the Department of Transportation a letter in early June asking him to take the North-South Corridor off the books. The DOT had earlier said they might do that. And, you know, we could save $140 million that could be put towards road repair. Well, I heard back from the secretary 3 weeks later, and he ignored everything that I said. As to Chris's question, I do not favor any increase in the gas tax or any increase in registration fees. Again, one of the foundations of my campaign is concern for the taxpayers. People are struggling out there, and I don't want to add to their burden.
Thank you.
Under the previous administration, over $1 billion was taken from the transportation fund, and we've tried to catch up ever since. We haven't got there yet. The governor's budget that's coming out now and the transportation secretary's is a step in the right direction in that 25% increase in local road improvements. That's the rural areas out here. 30% increase in the bridge maintenance fund and less bonding, $500 million, than has taken place in the last 10 or 12 years. So that's a step, several steps in the right direction here. So we still have the issue of the roads and the current roads. And what I've said throughout this campaign is if I have a house where the roof is leaking or an apartment house where the roof is leaking, I'm not going to build another one until I fix that roof. So we've got some roads that need work here, Highway 61, Highway 35, we could go on and on. Let's fix those roads before we start looking at new roads, new plans on the highways. That's what we need to do here in Wisconsin.
Could I?
Go ahead.
I would just like to say, as far as some of the dollars that the governor has put out early signs with his budget, that for in La Crosse County, we have $89 million identified in road projects. For La Crosse County, it's $127,000 to our county. That is just pennies about the need that we have for infrastructure. So as you look at statewide, we have $1 billion in road projects that are in the queue. And I know that my colleagues like to talk about an audit that's coming out. We're going to wait and see what is coming in the audit. But I sincerely doubt that the Transportation Department is going to come up with $1 billion in cuts to their department to come up with this recommendation.
I just like to say that if you're driving around La Crosse at all and you're not running into construction projects, you must be not have your eyes open, because it's all over. It is all, we're spending money here in Western Wisconsin on our roads, without question. Now, is it enough? Not enough for some people. I get that. I do get that. But we have to look at this audit. We have to look at what the budget's going to be. And then let's spend the money we have. Let's not spend money we don't have at this point, please.
Let me add my agreement, Dan. You know, everybody wants money these days. Corrections wants money. Transportation wants money. The UW system wants money. We've got to prioritize. And the governor, I don't like him all that much, but I totally agree with him when he says we should delay these major projects and concentrate on fixing the roads that need repair.
Next question comes from WLSU's Hope Kirwan, goes to Chip DeNure.
The economy has been a major focus of both national and state races this year. What's the current status of the economy in your district, and what can we do to spark economic growth?
Well, that's a big question. From what I can tell, the economy is doing well in the 32nd district. Nationwide, I don't think that's the case. And I, if you want to make the economy better, elect Donald Trump president.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Kopanke.
Well, if you drive around again and go into businesses in this part of the state, there's help wanted signs all over the place. I think businesses are really doing quite well. And we need a larger workforce. Just 6 or 7 years ago, we were seeing layoffs of unemployment high. We were at 8.1%, I believe, like 6-7 years ago. We're now at 4.2 or 4. We're below the national average. I think this part of the world is doing very well. We could do better. We need a larger workforce. And I think to do that, we need to market the good things about Wisconsin and not run it down. We have so many good things going on here in this great state. Let's market that to the outside. Let's bring businesses in here. Let's bring a larger workforce in here. We all live here. We live here or go to school here. We love it here. We love this state. And so let's get that message out to people from outside the state and bring them in here and show them what we have.
Thank you. Senator Schilling?
Well, I think as you do look in La Crosse, our downtown, we see the success of public-private partnerships. I see it in other parts of the district. I see it in Vernon County, where the organics and buy local and the food economy is growing down there, that they are partnering with schools and healthcare facilities and local producers for farmers to find a market for their food. But can we do better? We certainly can. And I think one of the areas that we could help us with economic development and building an economy is expanding broadband and strengthening broadband across this state. Broadband is the great equalizer for economic development for large and small communities. It is really the rural electrification of this century. So as we look at expanding broadband, we need to stop giving taxpayer dollars to companies that outsource our jobs overseas, as in WEDIC has been caught through an audit of giving businesses money that they outsource. We need to take a look at small business and entrepreneurs. The last 2 years, Wisconsin has ranked 50th, dead last for entrepreneur startups here in the country.
Okay, thank you. Next question comes from Bob Schmidt of 1490 and goes to Dan Kopanke.
I have to give you guys credit because last debate I watched, there's a lot of fighting, no shaking of hands. so you guys are very civil. I'd like to say thanks for that. Our political climate is a mess these days with all the fighting and the name calling at the top, and that seems to spill down into our local and state politics. How, if elected, will you reach out across the aisle and work with all of the parties?
Well, it's a must. We have to do that for the good of the people that we're representing. I have a record. I have the distinction of being the lone senator in my caucus to vote with the Democrats on several key issues at Madison. I don't know how many senators can say that, but I felt it was the right thing to do for the people in this district and the state. And one of them was the indexing of the gas. They wanted to remove that automatic indexing back in, I think it was 06. And I said, as a businessman, you gotta have a revenue flow. Fellas you and gals, you gotta have a revenue flow. And they didn't replace that revenue. And look where we are today in transportation and where we might have been had we not removed that indexing. So that's just an example of working across the aisle when it's best for the people here in Wisconsin. And I have a track record of doing that. Jen and I worked on several bills together and other senators from the other side. It makes a lot of sense when it's right for the people.
Senator Schilling?
Well, I think I don't agree with the premise of your question about the local aspect. I think maybe at the top we are seeing that, but really we have had a history here in Western Wisconsin and within this delegation going back to the days of John Mettinger and Brian Rood and Mark Meyer and Dwayne John of working together, that we check our D's and R's at the door and we do what is best for this region. I think we will continue to do that, whoever is elected or reelected in this position. I have been proud when I moved to the Senate. It was a pretty chilly reception for me. I mean, it was a tough, toxic atmosphere after 2011. And I reached out to the majority leader, and now it's serving as the Senate Democratic leader, working with the majority leader, introducing pieces of legislation with him, working on key things that are behind the scenes kind of issues for quality of life in the Senate. And I've also worked on numerous pieces of legislation with my Republican colleagues here locally. It's the rail crossing bill with Representative Narrison. It's licensure of physician compact with Representative Vandermeer. It's working on the heroin and opioid task force. So these are issues that we work on, that I'm proud to work on and extend the olive branch across the aisle with my Republican colleagues.
Okay, thank you. Chip Dunor?
Well, Bob, I'm a person of strong opinions, but I'm a pretty easygoing guy. If I get elected to the Senate, I'm pretty sure, you know, I'd work well with I'm an independent. I'd work well with Republicans on things that I agreed with them on, and I'd work well with the Democrats on things that I agreed with them on. Pretty simple, really.
Okay, next question comes from Brad Williams from Wisdom and goes to Jennifer Schilling.
Senator, there is at least one interest group that has made your career and your career path an issue in this election, with certain ads saying, stop her from climbing the political ladder. And there is talk about you seeking further office in the future if you're reelected. And we know that both Mr. Kopanke and Mr. Dunor have also run for Congress in the past as well. What would all three of you like to say to the voters of the district right now about committing yourself to the work of the state Senate during the 4 years and any future thoughts you might have?
Well, I'm always flattered when people bring my name up or if I'm a short list for running for something in the future, but my heart is committed to the state Senate. I am very flattered that People think I may have the skills and the temperament to run for something different, but certainly serving in the state Senate. And when I came in as the leader, I said I was focused on building a Democratic majority in the state Senate. And that's elections in 2016, 2018, and 2020 for redistricting. So I know that we have seen outside groups, and they've got initials from Washington, D.C., and they like to flood your mailbox with all of these things. And this is a big-time Washington, D.C. group that is Republican for state legislative committees that is committed to defeating Democrats and taking them out if they are thinking about running for higher office. So voters don't like you to look ahead past the election that you're in. And so, you know, Chris and I and our boys are fully committed to running and serving in the state Senate, and we continue to call La Crosse home. And I think it's very presumptuous to look ahead because voters don't want that. And I am asking for their vote to be reelected to the state Senate.
Okay, thank you. Chip Dinner.
Well, Brad, I have a limited ambition. All I want to do is get elected to the Senate, and I'll serve one term if I'm elected, and that's it. Then I'm going to come home and rest and relax and watch the Cubs.
Thank you. Dan Kubanki.
Well, I've served people in this district for about 35 years, 2024, 2023 with the seed business and with the Senate, and I love this district. I can tell you that I've been to Bud. Anybody know where Bud is? Bloomingdale, Rockton, Lafarge, all around this district. I have friends. And I've reconnected with them many times during this campaign. And I can tell you, I'm not leaving them. I get elected. I'm here for 4 years to serve them to the very best of my abilities.
Okay, thank you. Next question comes from Jane Kleikamp, League of Women Voters.
Hello. By every account, the voter ID law was a solution in search of a problem. The League of Women Voters believes that voting is a fundamental citizen right that should be guaranteed and as simple as possible. As a state senator, what would you do to decrease apathy among voters and reverse the unnecessary voter ID law placed upon the citizens of Wisconsin?
Oh, Mike. Well, you know, I think in Wisconsin, we've got we don't have much fraud in the voter, so I don't know about the voter ID. I'm undecided on it. But I can tell you this. Nationwide, it's a big worry with these electronic voting machines that can be hacked and votes can be switched. And I'm very worried about that affecting the outcome of the presidential election. What was the last part of your question again, Jane?
What would you do to decrease apathy among voters and reverse the unnecessary voter ID law on the citizens of Wisconsin?
Well, you know, be honest, decrease apathy, be honest with the voters. Tell them what you think, you know, even if it's unpopular. Tell them what you think, and at least they'll give you credit for that.
Mr. Kopanke?
Well, it is a right and a fundamental right, and we must make it as easy as possible for everybody to vote. Now, having said that, during a campaign that I was in a few years ago, I was on a university campus that was very close to Minnesota, not this one. And I was asking students, are you voting? Where are you voting? Are you voting at home or are you voting here? They were from Minnesota. They were from South Dakota, North Dakota, Iowa. And several of them answered, I don't know. I might vote both places. And they were being honest. They were being honest. They didn't know that they couldn't. And so, again, we make this voter ID law as seamless and as possible for everybody. We've tried, we've done that. And, you know, where do you go where you don't have to show an ID? I mean, to your bank, to change your cell phone program, for Pete's sakes, or how many other places don't you need an ID? And they're accessible. You can get an ID. You got all year to get an ID. Voting on November 8th is special, and we must hold that as a credible.
Senator Kopanke, I'm sorry, Senator Schilling.
Thank you. Well, I have long opposed the requirement for a photo ID. It unnecessarily targets, impacts students, people with disabilities, and folks who don't own an automobile and don't have a driver's license. we do need to make it easier to vote. And I think by opening, having a longer window of early voting, we are seeing the success right now of early voting. And some communities in this state have had 6 weeks of it. Here in the county of La Crosse, in the city of La Crosse, our clerk decided to do 3 weeks, just 1 week in advance of the 2 weeks that we typically have. But it's a constitutional right. And don't confuse renting a movie using your photo ID, using your driver's license, or opening a bank account, or flying on an airplane with the same thing as your constitutional right to vote. Just yesterday, someone was trick-or-treating at our house and said they wanted to vote and they couldn't. Today, I was knocking on doors on the north side and a woman said her husband is a veteran and difficult for him to get places, and he was told he could not use his veteran's ID down at City Hall. And now she had to go out to the DMV to get it. Very complicated. We need to make it easier to vote.
Thank you.
Jennifer mentioned early voting. I think we should do away with it. You vote on the election day. Look what's happening in this election. The FBI has now reopened the case against Hillary Clinton for her emails. Now, people have already voted for Hillary Clinton, and now you've got this information coming out that could change their vote. Get rid of early voting.
Okay, next question comes from the Student Association. If elected, what specific measures would you take to fight for the university students in the upcoming biennial budget? Goes to Dan Kapanke.
Could you repeat that? I'm sorry.
If elected, what specific measures would you take to fight for university students in the upcoming biennial budget?
Well, in the last session, they passed this College Affordability Act, which was very beneficial for students out here. Very, very good program. It put $1 million in for grants for tech students. It allowed for emergency fund for students that might come up with some financial difficulties all of a sudden as an emergency. It worked with students and interns with businesses, which was wonderful. We have interns from this university at our baseball team, and it works out wonderfully. So I do all of those things. And I didn't answer Mike Thompson's question initially, but I would continue the freeze because for the last 4 years, it saved the average student $6,300. And that's very, very important. Now, the Chancellor in Eau Claire has said that we should push to get students through in 4 years so they can get out working. It saves them like $50,000. So let's make sure that we can do that. And let's make sure that if you really want to get through in 4 years, we get you through and out into the workforce making money.
Thank you. Senator Schilling?
If reelected, I would continue to be that voice for UW students here on campus. I am proud to be to listen to them and issues that they have been concerned about. I would continue to fight for refinancing of your student loan so you are not saddled with that debt. I would go to Madison and fight on the building commission for additional revenues and bonding authority for an additional dorm here on this campus. We are at about 10,000 students who are enrolled. That building has been in the queue, but it has not been approved. I would go and I would fight for that. I would look for peer compensation for our great faculty and staff here, that we are seeing them being wooed away to other campuses who have the commitment to invest in higher education. It's very uncertain in this state where we are going on higher education in this state and funding for it. So I would fight for additional revenues, additional investment in our university system. And I would just say that the governor's package on affordability was merely window dressing. It was anemic. It's sending a postcard to students so that they know how much they are in debt.
I just want to say that wasn't window dressing when you're talking $1 million. That's real money. And when you have an emergency fund that's $500,000 for the students that might need it, that's real money. I'd like to say that very early on in my career in Madison, when I was first elected, I was still finding out where the restrooms all were. And I went against my leadership in funding for this university system. And people here know that, and people at Madison know that I'm a fighter for what I think is right.
Well, I agree 100% with Jennifer on reducing the cost, the interest rates on student loans. Absolutely, bring it down. But as for more money for the UW system, as I said earlier, I'm opposed to it. If more money is needed, then get rid of the tuition freeze. I'll give you an example. I mean, Ray Cross wants to spend, of the Board of Regents wants to spend $40 million, and part of that is to convince high school kids to go to college, and I think that's totally a total inappropriate use of taxpayer money.
I would just like to add that when this, we were in this room at the Chancellor's Community Council, and my opponent, Dan Kopanky, was asked, what would he do for additional funding for the university? And he said, look, this community loves this university. Whatever this university needs, people in this community will step up and pay for it. And I highly doubt that the philanthropic mothers and fathers of our community, like the name of Scogan or Weber or Gillette or other very generous people in this community, are going to step up for additional financial aid for students, are going to step up for the bricks and mortar of this campus, are going to step up for compensation for our faculty. That just doesn't seem real.
I'd just like to say she's kind of taken that out of context. I said at that point that if there was not enough money coming from Madison, people in this community would step up. If I looked at the chancellor and I said, if you need something, chancellor, you come out here. We're here for you. And when we built this stadium right here, $18 million or 17 or whatever it was, this community did that. And if we can do that, how much more can't we do? How much more can't we do?
I don't think they're going to pay for the HVAC system needed in a university building. I don't think we're going to have a bake sale and a fundraising goal to help with financial aid, to help Upward Bound students who are first-generation college kids to complete a degree. We need that partnership, and we need the investment, and we as a state have a responsibility to meet that commitment to help offset the cost of higher education.
Next question comes from Mike Thompson, WKBT, and goes to Jennifer Schilling.
Sticking with the education theme, the Journal Sentinel reported last week that the state will spend nearly $245 million on private school vouchers this school year. Do you believe that the state of Wisconsin can continue to support basically two education systems?
I don't believe that the state can continue to do that. We have seen the voucher program, which initially started as a program in the Milwaukee school, in the city of Milwaukee, in the MPS for low-income minority students. And then it grew to Milwaukee County, then it has grown to now statewide. $230 million has gone to expanding vouchers in our state, and now it's expected to grow another $245 million. That is coming off of what we support our public schools. I have never been a supporter of expanding vouchers in this state. They're unaccountable. They don't have the same standards and rigors and testing requirements that our public schools do. That never seems fair to me, that we are not really comparing apples to apples when we look at those voucher schools. And that money is then again coming off, and it is making it harder and harder for our to support our public schools at the level that they need.
Chip DeNoor.
Well, I'm totally against vouchers. I don't want to expand them. I didn't want them in the first place. There's no sense. It just doesn't make any sense for the taxpayers to be sponsoring private schools, paying for private schools. It's ridiculous. That's pretty much all I got to say. It's ridiculous.
What I'd like to say is we have a great school. School districts in this part of the state. We really do. And again, I've attended school board meetings, and I am fiercely proud of what I saw and what I heard in the school board meetings. Great, great things are happening. Now, we can't say that about all the schools throughout the state. We just can't, and that's a fact. And so, don't we want every student to have the best possible outcome that they can have? Aren't we for the students here? Good schools, especially the ones in our part of the state, shouldn't be worried about competition because they're already doing the job. They are doing the job. But if we have special cases where the students are being left behind, please, let's be on the side of the students.
Next question comes from Carolyn Hecker, WXOW, goes to Chip DeNoor.
Earlier this year, Governor Scott Walker signed two bills into law that block federal funding from Planned Parenthood. Opponents of the legislation say it will restrict access to birth control because Planned Parenthood won't be able to afford to continue to supply it. Governor Walker's argument is that community health care clinics can replace Planned Parenthood in providing services, especially to low-income women. He also wants to be sure taxpayer dollars are used in a way that is, quote, responsible and reasonable. Do you agree, disagree, and why?
I would agree with the governor. Planned Parenthood has had some nasty information come out about them. So I'm with the governor on that one.
Ms. Kubatke?
I'm agreeing with the governor on this as well. You've seen the videos. They're horrible. Absolutely horrible. And I've said this, that animals treat their young better than we do at times. It's not funny. We're talking about lives here. We're talking about lives. All of us in this room were given the great gift of life. But some people aren't having that choice, over 50 million. And what went on in Planned Parenthood is unconscionable. Unconscionable when you think about it and when you look at those videos. These are human beings, people.
Shelley?
Well, there we go again. When a man is asked about women's health, they immediately go to abortion. They immediately go to, instead of thinking about what those clinics are providing, mammograms, cancer screenings. For many women and some men, Planned Parenthood and those clinics are the only access point for health care. And I am proud that in the district that I represent, there are four counties, and we have a health care clinic open in each one of those counties, maybe not daily, but at least once a week. As we look at what has happened for defunding Planned Parenthood, we are making it more difficult for women to access birth control, for women to get annual exams, to get those cancer screenings. And unlike my opponent, Senator Dan Kopanky, when he was senator, he was one of the few votes against the compassionate care for rape victims, not even allowing emergency room doctors to provide and prescribe a full array to let those women who are survivors of sexual assault and rape the emergency contraceptive that they deserve.
Okay, next question comes from Chris Hubbage. 30 seconds.
Yeah, the question was funding Planned Parenthood, not about abortion. And I'm not funding it because of what they do, number one. And number two, there's 162 FQHCs and rural health clinics in Wisconsin, seven times the number of Planned Parenthood, which do many of the same things that Planned Parenthood does. So access for women and everybody to health clinics, it's all here, right here in Wisconsin.
I will just say the federally qualified health care center, we have one in Cashton, and we have public health departments in every county in the state. Those public health departments are on record saying we are not equipped. We do not have the infrastructure to suddenly absorb these patients into our access point. It's not realistic. It is not realistic. You just have to ask someone on the La Crosse County Board or Vernon or Crawford County Board if their public health department can suddenly do mammograms, if they can check for a biopsy, if they can do these prescriptive screenings. They can't. We need these clinics.
Let me just sound off here. You know, there's so many problems that are health related. It's one of the big failures of the United States government that we don't have a single payer healthcare system. Instead, we have this disaster known as Obamacare. If we had a single payer healthcare system, everybody would be covered. We wouldn't need to be have Planned Parenthood doing mammograms and that sort of thing. So single payer healthcare, just like Canada.
Next question comes from Hope Kirwan. Goes to Dan Kopanky.
Agriculture is important to many communities in your district, and Wisconsin farmers continue to suffer from low prices. How do you hope to help producers in our state?
Well, one of the things that we can do for farmers is make sure that our rules and regulations fit them, and they can operate efficiently. And secondly, we need to work with our national people. As far as trade is concerned, there's many, many trade deals that have been made that are not to the advantage of our farmers, especially the ones here in this area. I talked to an organic farmer a couple weeks ago, and he has to produce his milk to a certain standard, but yet they're shipping milk in from across the pond that doesn't have to meet those standards. That's what he told me. And so if that's the case, then those are some of the things that we can do for our farmers here in this area.
Senator Schilling?
I am pleased that I've earned the endorsement of the Farm Bureau as well as the League of Conservation Voters. I think that that demonstrates that I understand the important work that farmers need to do, but also together we want to conserve our natural resources and be good stewardships of the land. What other ways that we can help our farmers here in the state? Certainly a $250 million cut to the university system, which trickles down to the extension offices, that's not helpful. In La Crosse County and in Vernon County, two counties where dairy or ag is very high, we don't even have an ag agent in these two counties. They are partnering with Monroe and with Richland Center. We need to look at helping transition from generation to generation, mentoring if there are new young farmers that want to get in and get them paired with an existing farmer. We need to look at ways of ag modernization. We had an ag modernization dairy credit that I was supportive of. It's also broadband. Our farmers are saying we need to be connected. It's not only access, it's speed. And finally, looking at growing the organic industry or organic farming in this state and partnering with them.
The prices are low, aren't they? Because the weather has been so great, the climate has been so great lately, certainly in the Coulee region, probably in most of the United States, that the farmers are able to produce bountiful crops. And when you've got a lot of crop, you know, the prices go down. I'll say that, and please don't, I'm serious about this. If you let farmers grow marijuana, that's going to bolster their income. And that's another reason to legalize it.
Sure, question.
I just want to say, as a follow-up there, that, again, I've dealt with farmers for over 20 years. Farmers are seasoned, smart people, and they have dealt with the high milk prices, the low milk prices, the high commodity prices, the low commodity prices for years and years. And if you go out on a farm and actually talk to them about that, they will say, yeah, this happens. And as Chip said, the weather's been good. The yields, corn yields have been 200 plus. Bean yields have been 60, 70. I've even heard of some 80 bushel bean yields. It's been tremendous for the farmers, tremendous.
Okay, thank you. Bob Schmidt, the next question goes to Jennifer Schilling.
Well, the three of you live in La Crosse, but your district goes all the way down to Crawford County. What in the rural districts are you going to be working on compared to what you're doing here at home?
Well, I will continue to talk about broadband because I think that that is really that great equalizer. And I know that Vernon Communications has done some great things with expanding broadband. Ferryville, where I was just not too long ago, meeting with three businesses who live on top of the ridge there, and they don't have access. And we have a wood manufacturer, there was an insurance company, a small business owner, and someone in ag, and a flower business, and said, we would grow our business if we were connected, but we are that last mile. So I will continue to work on broadband expansion. I will also continue to work on buy local, if that has been successful for many of our producers of food, making them connected. And we have seen the good work that Sue Noble is doing with economic development down in Vernon and starting the business partnerships down there and helping those young entrepreneurs, especially in Vernon County. We've got Wisco Pop, we've got Driftless Brewing, we've got the Driftless Cafe and Driftless Beer. These are great small businesses that are starting. So to continue that small business growth in our smaller rural communities.
Chip Denier.
Well, you know, a wise expenditure of tax dollars is going to benefit people in La Crosse, and it's going to benefit people in Prairie du Chien and Viroqua and Ferryville and Holman and West Salem. So, again, one of the foundations of my campaign is concern for the taxpayers and not spending money unnecessarily, like, for example, on the North-South Corridor, $140 million. You know, a wise expenditure of tax dollars is going to benefit everybody, and not spending tax dollars where you shouldn't spend them is going to benefit everybody as well.
Mr. Kranke?
They need help with infrastructure out there. I mentioned a couple of roads earlier tonight. They need that. Jen mentioned broadband, need that. In getting around to the businesses, too, they're also looking for a workforce. There's a business in Gaze Mills that wants to hire up to 100 people. it's hard to find a workforce. And as I mentioned earlier, we need to market this state. We need to market this state. When these young people here graduate, I hope that they stay here in this great state of Wisconsin, because we need you. We absolutely need you right here. And so it would help here, but it would also help the rural areas as far as bringing people into the state, train them if they need to be trained, and put them to work here. That would really help this entire 32nd district.
Okay, this will be the last question coming. Please be as brief as possible. It comes from Brad Williams.
We just heard mention of wise spending of tax dollars as a goal that should be reached by the legislature. Is there an item in the budget, something that is not getting enough attention from Madison, and maybe enough dollars that you would want to promote after the election?
Chip?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, one of the big failures of the Walker administration is the Department of Natural Resources. It's my understanding that if the DNR is allowed to keep more of the money it receives in fees, it can hire more employees and then better enforce the laws regulating pollution. We can keep our water safe from these big animal feedlots with all the manure getting into the water and into the air and everything. So the health of the people of Wisconsin is a top priority, and the DNR is not doing its job, and Governor Walker better get that department in order for the sake of our health and for the sake of tourism.
Mr. Kopanke?
Again, if there's money, infrastructure, especially in the rural areas, the other thing that that I would suggest is, and I've been talking about it all night, is marketing this state. If we could spend more money marketing and bring businesses in here and bring people in here, we're all going to be better off. We're looking for good people, and those are the areas that I would cover. Thanks, Brad.
Thank you. Senator Schilling?
I think two of the issues that I've been concerned about that I feel like is not getting enough attention, certainly, is what is happening in our correctional facilities and in our veterans' homes. Lincoln Hills, the juvenile correctional facility in northern Wisconsin, has seen worker shortage. We have seen increase of assaults, both on correctional officers, but within the juveniles in there. We have had some deep concerns about the leadership there at Lincoln Hills and what is happening there, and asking for an audit of Lincoln Hills. We are seeing in correctional facilities such as in Prairie du Chien and others that we are seeing staff shortage there of those correctional officers. That is tough work, and it is dangerous work. We are also seeing some of the staff shortage and the infrastructure shortage at King's Veterans Home. And luckily that was just agreed to for an audit, but certainly we need to make sure that Wisconsin's most vulnerable citizens, our juveniles, and our veterans are taken care of in institutions that are safe.
Okay, I'd like to please ask you now, going to your closing statements. Chip DeNeur go first, Jennifer Schilling second, and Dan Kopanke third.
Okay, for the last year and a half, there's been a terrible thing happening in the Cooley region. An unholy alliance between the La Crosse Area Planning Committee, the suburban leaders, and the Department of Transportation to try to force the North-South Corridor on La Crosse. It is undermining the fundamental principle of our democracy, the will of the people. I stand for the will of the people. Dan Kopanke stands for the will of the people on the North-South Corridor. If you elect me to the State Senate, I promise you, I will lead the fight against the North-South Corridor when that issue rears its ugly head, and it will. I'll use my common sense, my integrity as a human being, and my deep regard for the truth to serve the people of the 32nd District, to protect the marsh, to protect La Crosse neighborhoods, and to protect the taxpayers of the 32nd District.
Thank you. Senator Schilling?
Well, thank you, and thank you to the sponsors for tonight, and thank you all for coming and joining us tonight. It has been my deep honor and distinction to represent this community for the last 5 years. I believe, like you believe, we in Wisconsin, we believe in the promise of a better tomorrow. But that promise has been broken or not met for too many people, that we have seen poverty at a 30-year high. Last year, we saw 10,000 job layoffs. We continue to rank near the bottom for small business and entrepreneurs here in this state, and our schools continue to feel the impact of deep cuts. I ask you to join me as we can look to lift this state up. We can look for ways to help grow and support our middle-class families. We can reject big business. We can reject special interests from out of state that come in here and ask for special favors. Join me as we look for ways that we can help middle-class families with childcare costs, with supporting education, looking to help those who are on the eve of retirement and looking for pension security. I know we all do better in this state when we have good schools, good jobs, and good infrastructure. I respectfully ask for your vote on November 8th.
Thank you, Senator. Dan Kopanky.
I'm very, very passionate about this state. I love the state. I love the 32nd. I love the people in it. If you travel this state from this corner to way up north, east, south, this is a beautiful state. It's diversified. It has diversified industry, diversified people. It has some of the most scenic views that you're ever going to get anywhere in the world, right here in the 32nd District. Yeah, this is a great place. We love it. And I would say we market what we love about this state, and there are so much to market. So much to market. And let's come together and work on those things that are challenges to us. And we've talked about some of those challenges today. There is nothing here that I've heard tonight that we as a people can't overcome. We have to be very mindful, however, that as elected officials, we're not spending our money. It's fun to spend somebody else's money. We have to be mindful of the taxpayer, and then we prioritize, and then we make decisions. I appreciate you being here tonight. I ask for your vote. Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank Senator Schilling, Mr. Kopanky, Mr. Dunur for being here, and I think they certainly deserve another round of applause.
I'm with you, buddy. I'm with you.
I'd like to thank everybody for attending and remind you that election, if you don't know it, is next week, November 8th. Nice job.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, great job.